Awareness, situational awareness. What's going on around you? Do you notice it? Is it important to you? How does it affect you? We're going to read about a tribe of Israel tonight in 1 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 32. If you want to turn over there, and I'm going to take one verse, and I'm going to read that verse, and we're going to get into a little history about what was going on here with this verse. Thank you, honey. I appreciate you so much. We're going to read about the sons of Issachar. This is a verse that's tucked away and it's connected to other verses in the Bible. The sons of Issachar were very instrumental initially in among the 12 tribes of Israel. We're going to read beginning in verse 32. And of the children of Issachar, which were men that had understanding of the times, translated, they had situational awareness, to know what Israel ought to do. The heads of them were 200, and all their brethren were at their commandment. They had their house in order. They understood the times. The sons of Issachar had something special. Their ability among the other tribes to discern the times and seasons was an incredible advantage. They were good in agriculture because they understood the signs of the times as far as nature goes, as far as the changing seasons. They had the ability that gave them inside knowledge and understanding of God's activities. Well, in order to have that, their heart had to be in tune with God to know His will. They were not taken by surprise when things happened, be it tragedy, be it violence, be it troubles, be it struggle. They were not taken by surprise because their heart was in tune with God. They had influence as a result of their unique ability to understand these times and these seasons. You see, people looked at them as credible because they had been able in the past to predict what was going to happen and to be able to interpret what was happening. So they had a unique gift among the 12 tribes of Israel, the sons of Issachar, which was a tribe in and of itself, that they were able to understand the times. So there's a lot that we can glean from verse 32, that they understanding of the times. They knew what Israel should do and when it should be done. And the nation followed their example because they had been trusted and were found trustworthy. The sons of Issachar were sharp. They were spiritually astute. The whole nation depended on them to know what they ought to do and when they ought to do it. They supported King David before he became king. And even King Saul wasn't really happy about, and you know, those of you that read through the Bible, King Saul wasn't real happy about King David, about the oncoming of King David. But the sons of Issachar promoted King David and put the 12 tribes at ease and at rest. I even read about where the sons of Issachar in the book of Judges. There was a female judge by the name of Deborah. Those of you familiar that study. Deborah, obviously a female judge, that wasn't too well thought of among the tribes of Israel. Really? A female judge? Uh-uh. But the sons of Issachar gave the blessing for a female judge named Deborah. So these sons of Issachar had their heart right with God, and they understood the signs of the times. And they were, like I said, they helped in promoting, they supported King David and before he became king, and even when he wasn't popular. And here's something else. All the tribes were kind of split on King David, except the sons of Issachar. And they were not. They were in unison. They were completely behind King David. And they knew that God had called him to be king. So because they knew that, because they were aware of the times, they promoted King David. So David became the next king, and he's one of the most popular, and probably the stories about King David is one of the most popular human kings perspective of Israel history today. So the sons of Issachar were instrumental in that. And I think it's important to note in verse 23, they understood the times. They had situational awareness. So tonight, I want you to gauge your situational awareness as we stroll through this lesson. I mean, there's a lot going on. A lot going on. And if you just kind of, I don't know if I ever told this story, but I was on jury duty several years ago. And this guy, and you know, when you go to, I mean, we're all the same. When we go to jury duty, I mean, when the clerk says, is there any of you that can't be in jury service? Well, you know, half of us raise our hand. We don't want to go to that. I mean, but let me say, as a police officer and a trooper, I appreciate your service in jury duty. Because I've had 9 jury trials, and I appreciate people that serve because I need like-minded people. Whether you vote innocent or whether you vote not guilty or guilty, well, I need like-minded people on the jury. And I need people that work and that are responsible, and I want people to make a good decision. Maybe they don't agree with me, but I want good, like-minded people on my jury, so I appreciate jury service. But this guy was... You could tell he was a religious man. He attended church probably every time the doors were open. And he raised his hand and he said, Your Honor, I don't believe that my Bible allows me to sit on a jury. I don't think that I can judge a man. And I sat and I listened to that and I'm thinking, you know, I disagree with that guy. We make judgments every day. And I've talked about that. We don't, the Bible tells us not to condescend folks. We make judgments every day. Go hop on an airplane and look in the cockpit, and if the pilot's got a Budweiser between his legs, you probably ought to make a good judgment there and exit and go off the plane. We make judgments every day. But this guy, somehow in his mind, he relegated that, well, you know, I don't really think that I should sit on the jury duty because I don't want to pass judgment. The judge didn't buy it, and he kind of told him to sit back down. But the point is, that guy kind of just put it on cruise control. And he's kind of just saying, whatever will be. And I'm not going to participate because it doesn't matter. The Bible says this, and I'm just going to set cruise control. No big deal. The Bible doesn't teach that. And I think oftentimes we get a false sense of security thinking that, well, you know what? We compartmentalize. And we just kind of hang out in church. We hang out with church people. We don't interact. We don't really engage. We don't really pay attention. And we turn our situational awareness off. Let's talk about situational awareness. You must have situational awareness if you're going to survive in our troubling world today. Our tendency is to substitute what we wish was happening to what is actually happening. Let me say that again. Our tendency is to substitute what we wish was happening to what is actually happening. Let me illustrate this for you. How many times have you heard of something bad happening somewhere else and you think to yourself, well, that'll never happen here? Or when something bad does happen here, you think to yourself, wow, I never thought that would happen here. See, we turn our situational awareness off. We just kind of... We going back to what I said, we substitute what we wish was happening to what is actually happening. We hear about our Christian liberties being taken away, and we tell ourselves, well, that's just the culture we live in. How many of you have said this in the last 2 weeks? That's just a sign of the times. And our situation, we just kind of tune out our situational awareness. Now, here's the problem. We let our guard down because we want harmony in a politically correct world. We do. It's kind of burdensome to contact legislators. It's kind of burdensome to see what's going on. And it's kind of burdensome to research who you're going to vote for and find out what they believe and why they believe it. So we just kind of go along with the flow, or we don't care, or we become apathetic. One of the things that Danetta does when, I probably don't have permission to tell this, I'm really going to be in trouble, but when she takes in resumes and she brings people in, she tests them. And she tests people and she just asks basic questions. Who are our 2 U.S. senators? What are their names? How many congressional districts do we have in the state? What district are we in and who is our state representative? I'm not going to embarrass anybody, but how many of you know the answer to those questions? We tune ourselves out because, well, I really don't like that Trump guy. He's kind of mouthy on Twitter, and I ain't going, I'm going to turn myself out and tune myself out, and I'm not going to get involved. Listen, we got a governor's election in 3 weeks, and this is the quietest election I've ever heard. I mean, ain't nobody talking about it. I don't really know how that conveys and how you prognosticate who's going to win, but in my realm and where I'm at, nobody's talking about it. I watch it on Twitter. Nobody's talking about it. So is it our situational awareness? We've kind of tuned it out and we don't care. Have we become apathetic? Christians shouldn't be apathetic. Look, here's the deal. And much of this message is Dr. Robert Jeffers. He's a hero of mine. I love his messages. And I mean, I've told you before, a lot of my teachings in my Sunday school class come from Dr. Jeffers. This is a message from Dr. Jeffers. But he says this, that that's just the culture we live in. We hear about our Christian liberties getting taken away. That's no big deal. We hear religious leaders say things like, well, there's more than one way to heaven other than Jesus Christ. We don't believe that, do we? So why do we support politicians that do believe that? That ought to be rule number one. Amen. If you're looking at who you should vote for, and that guy is advocating that there's more than one way to heaven, then you probably ought not to vote for that guy. I mean, I don't want to be offensive, but as I listened to his message, and I thought, you know, this is important in the world that we live in because we are tuning out and turning off our situational awareness. We want to be compassionate. You know, that's our liberal friends. That's what they hit on. They say that Jesus was a socialist. That you know, I laugh at that. But that's what they say. They truly believe that Jesus had so much love in his heart that he's just willing to overlook this wrongdoing. And I don't see that. But that's what they say. And they're wrong. So oftentimes we as Christians just kind of, well, I'm just going to stay out of it. I don't want to offend anybody. Look, I'm not telling you to get a ball bat and whip them for what they believe. I kind of liked what Ellen DeGeneres. Did you see that this weekend? Ellen DeGeneres was in a booth with former President George H.W. Bush. George W. Bush. George H.W. passed away. George W. And she caught a lot of flack from her liberal buddies. Well, how can you associate with that guy? And she had a great... You look, because we disagree don't mean we can't talk and be kind to one another. That's a very good lesson. But we live in a world now where it's been promoted, and it's been promoted a lot, that if you disagree with me, then you're wrong, and you're a racist, you're a misogynist, you're a bigot, and they want to attack our Christian viewpoints. The enemy of situational awareness is denial. And we tell ourselves, well, you know, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And we turn ourselves down. We allow ourselves not to get too tore up, not excited. I'm just not going to vote. And listen, I've been guilty of that. I've done it. I've put it in my mind that I'm not going to vote because I just don't like either one of the candidates. I've done that. But that's not what we're supposed to do. And I was convicted as I studied this. God didn't just save you to leave you here till the rapture comes. You are to be involved in your communities. You're to be involved in your courthouses. You're to be involved in your families. It's up to you to educate those around you. And if you don't have good situational awareness, if you don't understand what's going on in the chain of events, then you can't properly do that. So the enemy of situational awareness is denial. But if you're going to have situational awareness, and I guess this is probably more of a wisdom message than maybe anything else, and I'm hardly one to talk to anyone about wisdom, but this is a wisdom message. And if you're going to have situational awareness, you've got to have Wisdom. Now, we're kind of running short on wisdom these days. Now, not to pick on Joe Biden, but Joe Biden just last month, he was at an LGBTQ event in Des Moines, Iowa. Now, listen, folks, this is the polling. He is number one right now, the Democrats. Number one. If the election were held today, it does appear that Joe Biden will be the Democrat nominee for president of the United States. Listen to what he said. I'm just reading his words. In prison, the determination should be that your sexual identity is defined by what you say. It is not what, in fact, the prison says it is. Let me read that again in case you fell asleep. In prison, the determination should be that your sexual identity is defined by what you say it is, not what, in fact, the prison says it is. That's your front runner for the Democrat Party. That's disturbing to me. Coming from a correction police background, knowing how inmates think, I don't think I want to be a man today. I want to be a woman. I want to go hang out with the girls. And we've got a president wannabe that's advocating that. Wisdom has run amok. I'll quit picking on poor old Biden. Did you hear about the man in the Dutch businessman? He's suing. Get this. He's suing an online dating service because he wants to identify as a young man. He's 69. He wants to identify as a man. His birthday was March the 11th, 1949. But he wants to change his birthday to March 11th, 1969 because he'll have more opportunities to date women. And he's suing the dating service because they won't let him. That's disturbing. We laugh at it. You gotta laugh. I mean, Emil Rottelbond, that's his name. I mean, it's real. Look it up. He said this. We live in a time when you can change your name and you can change your gender. Why can't I decide my own age? Wisdom has run amok. What does Isaiah 5:20 say? Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Here's why we laugh and chuckle and our jaw drops when we hear these things. We see this lunacy because people have rejected the knowledge of the true God. They've rejected the principles and precepts of the Bible. That's foreign to us. We don't study it like we once did. We don't teach it to our children like we once did. And now we have run amok. Wisdom has run amok. You see, if you reject Him, you become deluded in your thinking. And that's how we end up with a presidential candidate that says, well, hey, if a man wants to identify as a man or a woman, let him do it. If he wants to identify as a man the next day, let him do it. It's really, and we struggle to even figure out our own gender. Brother Travis, I thought that was a great story that he told a couple weeks ago or maybe last week about the two MMA fighters, the one the man, the other the woman. The man cracked the skull of the woman, put her in the hospital. They went to her for comment. She said, hey, I'm not a doctor. I can't answer that. If he had an advantage because he was a man. We live in a world that's been deluded with humanism. And wisdom has eluded us because of the dilution, if that's a word. So the reality is that's the cause and we're seeing the effect. The fact is we've rejected Jesus, we've rejected His principles, and our thinking has been diluted. So here's some tips in gaining situational awareness. Tips in gaining situational awareness. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1 says, this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. In the last days. That was written 2,000 years ago. When's it going to happen? All I know is 2,000 years ago they thought it was about to happen. And we're 2,000 years closer to it happening. And I got to think that when we ain't smart enough to figure out if we're a man or a woman or a it or a being or whatever, I got to think it's getting close. I got to think it's just around the corner. when we've got transgenders now, and as you know, transgenders are those that want to be a woman so much so they dress up like a woman, that being a man, and they're promoted as heroes now. I mean, we've got political parties that want to support this line of thinking because they feel like there's enough votes attached to that, and if I go with them, they will in turn support me. Look, I'm not picking on transgenders, but there is so much, Christians are harassed so much on inclusion, at some point you got to say, really? What? And we have to stand up. We got to have the situational awareness to stand up. Let me point this out to you. I read this in 2 Timothy just a minute ago, 3:1. Know this also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. The Greek translation for perilous in that verse is only mentioned one other time. And it's in Matthew chapter 8:28. And you know the story, but I'm just going to just take a little bit from the story. And when he was come to the other side of the country of the Gergesenes, there met him two possessed with devils, coming out of the tombs, exceeding fierce, the same translation as perilous. That means without moral restraint. Man, you don't have to search the news too far to see there's a lot of that going on. No moral restraint. The FBI still reports that violent crime is going down. I don't see that. I'm not saying the FBI would lie, but I'm just saying I don't see it. It just seems to me like that there's not a day goes by that we don't hear of an atrocious shooting or mass murders. Troubled times we live in. Situational awareness has gone awry. Perilous times are upon us. So Paul is actually saying that in the last days before the Lord returns, it's going to be a time without any moral restraint. It's going to be a time where men want to identify as women. It's going to be a time where it's okay to kill a baby right up till the day it's born. Without moral restraint. We're there. So, tips for gaining situational awareness. Now, for those of us that say, well, I don't watch the news. I don't know what's going on. I'm oblivious to what's going on. Folks, you need to pay attention. If you're going to have good situational awareness, if you're going to be like the sons of Issachar, and you're going to be able to interpret to your peers, now we don't have tribes anymore, but we've got family clans, we've got friends and associates that we have influence over. People look to you for guidance and direction and wisdom. And if we're going to be like the sons of Issachar and interpret properly, if we're going to be like the sons of Issachar and we're going to be able to guide people properly, and that's what we're supposed to do. You know this. We're ambassadors. We are wholeheartedly supposed to show people how to live their everyday lives. I was lecturing in police class the other day, and I said, you people are responsible for people. You're going to police society of young people, old people that have never been taught respect. They don't understand it. It's not that they necessarily choose to be disrespectful to you, but they've never been taught it. Now, you know, there's debates. We've all debated why that is, but they've never been taught it. But the reality of it is you have to know what's going on. Brother Jeffers says it's stupid. He said there's a word for people that don't pay attention to what's going on, and it's called stupid. God didn't place you here to take up space until the rapture comes. I've already said that. We must understand what is happening around us. Did you see last week? Once again, if you're not aware, if you're not paying attention, you'll miss this, and you'll completely write it off as no big deal. Daryl Money, the general manager for the Houston Rockets, he tweeted a vote of support in a picture about Hong Kong. You know what's going on in Hong Kong? Hong Kong is basically the freedom fighters there. Freedom, they want democracy. They want a better democracy. And China has said, no, we're not going to tolerate your bad attitude. You must comply with us, a communist regime. So China police officers in Hong Kong, under the direction of the Chinese government, are killing protesters. Atrocities are going on over there. Talk to Lauren Denny about her two trips to China. You mention you're a Christian, you'll be thrown in jail. Probably lead the world in Christian persecutions. But Daryl Mooney tweeted support for Hong Kong because those people are getting annihilated because they want freedom. Because they want to worship God. Because they want free speech. He tweeted support. Man, he caught fire. They come after him. The liberals just demurred. How dare you? The NBA turned their back on him. Head coaches from the NBA started coming. How dare you? The Chinese Basketball Association. You know, I mean, we all want to please the Chinese Basketball Association. Said it would suspend all cooperation with the Houston Rockets. And the sports channel of China's top state broadcaster announced it would suspend airing Houston Rocket games. Now stay with me, I'm making a point here. James Harden, who's the star player for the Houston Rockets, comes out in a press conference and says, "Sorry, China. We're apologizing to a rogue communist regime who kills people that doesn't agree with them, who annihilates Christianity, who kills Christians just for the fun of it, or jails them to keep their mouth shut." If Lauren was here, I would ask her to speak up and just talk a little bit about that. Because I had her speak to the class. You had to be, when she was over there witnessing the secrecy that they had to do to witness to people. But yet, we're afraid of China. We're going to punish a guy who basically honored his free First Amendment rights, and he was promoting freedom, which is what we have and we enjoy. He was promoting freedom and he was chastised for it by the very same people that chastised Donald Trump and chastised freedom across the world. But yet, China brings in dollar bills. China is a big supporter of the NBA. So the NBA realizes, ooh, we don't want to make one of our customers mad. Oh, now we don't really agree with what Mr. Mooney said. So if you don't agree with what Mr. Mooney said, even though he's advocating freedom and religious liberty, then you must be against it. I mean, it blows my mind. So now all these liberal so-called do-gooders, they always want to talk about equality and mutual respect, but all of a sudden they're mum on China. Seth Curry's a professed Christian. I watched an interview that he did today, and buddy, he was mum, and he was like, "Well, I don't know much about the China history." What do you mean you don't know much about China history? China kills Christians. China kills people that speaks out against them. And he said, "Well, I really don't want to comment on that." He doesn't want to comment on it, but yet he wants to talk about all the misogyny and bigotry and racism that exists. Well, I've heard him comment negatively about the police when all that was going on about the police were under fire. Listen, the police in Hong Kong are a lot different than the police here. They'll just shoot you. They won't read your Miranda rights over there. But yet everybody's mum on that. I don't understand it. It's hypocritical in nature. I read a story last night that bothered me, and I read these things. If your situational awareness is off, then you will miss these things. Halal meat, H-A-L-A-L, halal meat, has now been approved by the Dearborn County, Michigan public school system to only be served in that school system. Does any of y'all know what halal meat is? Say it, brother.
It is a horrific slaughter practice of animals done under a Muslim cleric.
Yep. They drain the blood out of the meat. That's the first. Over here, we skin them, we gut them, we cut them up, we separate it, and we cook it, and we eat it. For the halal meat process, we drain the blood out. And then we bring in a Muslim cleric to pray over the animal. Because Muslims will only eat that meat. They won't eat a burger from Wendy's. because it's not halal meat. So you see how it intricates and it slips in? All because the Dearborn County school system wants to be inclusive to our Muslim friends. Folks, we can't be in line with Muslims. Their God is different than ours. I'm sorry, I don't want to be offensive. I don't want to make anybody mad. But it's not one way. If you believe in Allah, you're going to die and go to hell. I don't know how other way to say it. Except you believe in me, plainly, Jesus says it himself. So why does the school system, one of our school systems, in our discussions about two messages ago, I thought I maybe used 4 or 5 points on why America's a Christian nation. Why is a Christian nation, why is a school system in America trying to cater to the halal meat industry so we can honor these Muslim children? What happened to the days, if you're going to come over here and you're going to speak our language? Boy, that ain't popular, is it? Man, oh man, how dare Darren Allen say something like that? That if you're going to move to America, you ought to speak English. That if you're going to move to America, you ought to adopt our customs. If I go to Mexico, I'll adopt theirs. If I go to Europe, I'll adopt theirs. But when I come here, I should, this is America. I'm not apologizing for it. And that's one of the things I like about Trump. He doesn't apologize for being American. Maybe that's his appeal. I don't know. I wish I'd take his Twitter account away from him sometimes. I wish he'd quit the name calling that he does with Romney and some of the others. I mean, he was making fun of Steve Kerr today, a basketball coach. I wish I could take that away from him. But you know what? He loves America, and he promotes America. And for that, how do you guess that guy? I mean, he ain't telling an LGBTQ that we're going to let the inmates decide what they want to be. So let me say this. And here's something else about halal meat. Halal meat companies, a lot of the halal meat companies send money to terrorist organizations. But yet, if we don't have situational awareness and we're not paying attention and we stick our head in the sand, well, what's it matter? That's in Dearborn County, Michigan. It doesn't matter down here in Rockcastle County, Kentucky. And then the next thing you know, I saw last week where there was a big Muslim contingent going in West Virginia. It happened in Minneapolis. That's how we ended up with Ilhan Omar. Well, there's another colony going in West Virginia. Boy, that's getting close to home. And a guy was walking around doing his own personal video, and he said, there's going to be a mosque right here, and there's going to be housing. Our government's paying for them to come over here. And I don't say them in a degrading way, but I say them as lost people that have their faith in a false god. And they're wrong. And I think we fall guilty to inclusion, and we fall guilty to faulty situational awareness. And it's been going on. It's not something that just happened. So I got to hurry. Wisdom is essential for gaining situational awareness. Wisdom is not knowledge. Okay? Wisdom is not knowledge. Knowledge is a high ACT score. Knowledge is an accumulation of facts. But wisdom is not knowledge. Let me tell you what wisdom is. Wisdom is the ability to see life from God's perspective. Wisdom is the ability to see life from God's perspective, from God's point of view. Proverbs 9, verse 10 says, Solomon wrote this. How do you gain wisdom, you might ask? Well, Solomon lays it out. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. The fear of the Lord. See, we gave up fearing the Lord a long time ago, and now we've kind of left awry. So how do we gain wisdom? You must search for wisdom. You must actively search for wisdom. Proverbs chapter 2, 4 and 5 tells us, if thou seekest her as silver, speaking her as wisdom, and searchest for her as for hidden treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Let me break that down for you. Look for wisdom in people that you have in your life. Look at the things that they do good and look at the things that they do bad. Listen, one of the components of wisdom is learning from other people's mistakes. What can I glean from the mistake that they made so I won't make it? That's wisdom. Learn from people's mistakes. Learn from what they do. That's good. Look for wisdom in who you work with and who you work for. Take the good and the bad from each association. The next thing, listen to wise people. Psalm 1:1 in New Living Translation. I like the translation a little bit better. Oh, the joys of those who do not follow the advice of the wicked. Oh, the joys of those that do not follow the advice of the wicked. That's a little bit different with the KJV there. Or stand around with sinners or join in with mockers. Hang around with people that are awestruck at the holiness of God and you will get wisdom. But you know what? We like hanging out with successful business people. We like hanging out with golfers and athletes and boaters. We like hanging out with people that we deem as popular. And we've allowed our situational awareness to run amok. So people that are awestruck with the holiness of God really doesn't impress us that much anymore. And I'm not saying it, that I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I told you the story about the Houston Rockets and how money has dictated that situation. How much does money dictate in your life? How much is money in the decisions you make dictating your life? Are you going to vote for the next president based on how much money's in your bank account? Are you going to vote for the next president that gives you the best and the closest version of religious liberties, Christian liberties? That's how I vote. That's how I vote right there. I'm looking at the guy that's not going to undermine or take away my Christian liberties. I want to be for that guy that I'm able to worship and continue to freely worship and not be persecuted as a Christian. Not even remotely. Not civilly. Not through litigation. Not through anything like that. I want to serve the man. I want to vote for the man that won't affect my Christian liberties. It's not how much money. It's not necessarily his. And I like a president that's going to be a strong military advocate. I like that. But my number one, how does he affect my Christian liberties? So, we listen to wise people. Avoid cynics and scoffers, it says there. Ask for wisdom. Ask for wisdom. James 1:5 very clearly says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. The next thing, take action. Take action. Develop the skill to live your life according to God's plan. We need to have a biblical worldview. And we've kind of gotten away from that. We just have. And because we've gotten away from it, our kids aren't getting taught it. They're not getting taught it in school. They're not getting taught it. A lot of times, a lot of churches, it's just not taught. And we've gotten away from it. And because we've gotten away from it, we're starting to see the effect of it. So take action. Daniel 11:32 in the latter part of verse 32. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Let me say it another way. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and take action. Take action. Remember what I said. God just didn't leave you here until you're raptured up. It's our job to educate. It's our job to inform. It's our job to lead. It's our job to guide. It's our job to minister. Look, Brother Travis can't be the only preacher here. He's the only pastor, but he can't be the only preacher. And we have to serve, and we have to diligently seek. But I think, and this is probably the crux of the message, I think we've kind of let our situational awareness get turned down, turned off, and it's affected our desire to want to take action. Now, when you say take action, I know you think get a board and protest somewhere. I'm not necessarily saying that. But take action in your corner of the world. We've got to do more. We've got to. We're not instructed to quit. We're nowhere in the Bible does it say, well, the sign of the times are getting close, therefore you can start slowing down and not pay attention and give up. Nowhere does it say that. We are in a never-ending struggle with the enemy, so our situational awareness should never slack. So how do you maintain situational awareness? Really quickly here. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 6. It's the letter to Thessalonica. Very simply, very quickly. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Three short commands in order to maintain situational awareness. Number one, stay awake. Don't sleepwalk through life. Don't be like that guy I told you about sitting on jury duty. Well, I can't judge a man. And you just kind of stay over here in your lane and you don't really bother nobody and you really don't make a difference for anything. You don't really stand for anything. But Jesus lives in your heart and that's okay and we got it covered. But I'm just going to stay over here out of the way. And I'm not going to affect anybody. I'm just going to do my own thing. That's sleepwalking through life. That's what that is. And Paul says very, very plainly, very plainly, don't sleep. Number two, stay hopeful. Be alert, knowing that bad times are coming, but even better times are coming after that. Luke chapter 21, 28, the New Living Translation. So when all these things begin to happen, stand and look up, for your salvation is near. I know he's got the KJV translation there, but let me read this again. So when all these things begin to happen, stand and look up, for your salvation is near. Redemption is the KJV word there. A school system in a large city had a program to help children keep up with their social work while they were injured. So the teacher of a middle school class reached out to the teacher that ministers to the kids in the hospital. And she said, would you go to this young man? I'm afraid he's going to be behind on his nouns and his adverbs. She was an English teacher, obviously. And she went to this teacher that ministers to this hospital, will you go to this young man and teach him about nouns and adverbs? Because I don't want him to get behind while he's in the hospital. The teacher said, sure, I'll gladly go do that. So the teacher showed up the next day at the hospital room. Little did she know that the boy had been severely burned and given up for dead. But she began to talk to that young boy and the misery and his pain, and she began to teach him about nouns and adverbs. That doesn't sound too exciting, does it? I mean, I'm not going to... If you're having a meeting after church about nouns and adverbs, I'm probably going to be busy. But this teacher went to this young man and taught him nouns and adverbs. The next day, she got a call from the nurse in the burn unit. What did you say to that young man? His whole complexity of life has changed. What in the world? What did you teach him? The teacher's like, I don't know. I taught him some nouns and adverbs. I don't know. But the boy continued to show progress. He continued to get better. It was almost as if he had a reason to live. And when he got better, they ask him, what changed? Because we can look at your progress and we can pinpoint the day that you changed. You know what he told them? I'll read it to you. He expressed it this way. He said, they wouldn't send a teacher to work on nouns and adverbs with a dying boy, would they? The fact that they want to send someone to teach me about nouns and adverbs told me that there's still hope that I'm going to make it. And he flipped the switch. Nouns and adverbs. Well, you know what we have? Hope. This is just an encouragement message, but listen, we've got to do more. We've got to increase our situational awareness. We've got to pay attention to what goes on around us, and we've got to deliver the message of hope. Well, I'm old. I don't have many contacts anymore. Listen, here's my plea to you. Make a difference in your corner of the world. We need servants. We need servants. Right here. During homecoming, I helped set up and Donetta went in and got the box of people that had people that had spent time, a lot of time, I don't know who it was, some of you, God bless you if it was you, but somebody had taken the time to roll up the silverware and put a rubber band around it. Brother Travis has not recognized that person, whoever it is, but somebody spent a lot of time rolling up 300 pieces of silverware and putting it in a napkin for you to have. Nobody ever thought, I didn't think about it. I looked at that and I thought, wow. Look, we need people doing that so we can have good fellowship. We need people behind the scenes so we can have good fellowship. I got to hustle. One other story. And this is off script, so this may get nasty. I don't know. But the Ice Bowl was played in 1967. Let me get over here right fast. I don't want to botch this up because this is a good story. Stay with me. Don't lose me. I want to add this because this is so good. We get so caught up and we want credit for what we do. We want credit for what we do. Well, in 1967, the Ice Bowl was played between the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys. Now, there's probably only about three or four of you can remember that game, but I like reading about it. Anyway, the Cowboys were ahead. The Packers were trailing with 16 seconds left in the game to the Cowboys. Famed QB Bart Starr called timeout, and he went over to the coach, and he asked to run a sneak. Coach Lombardi said, nope, we're not running a sneak. He said, you tell Jerry Kramer, wedge 31, and you get in there and make that block, and you push in that. He said, we're not going to sneak it in. We're going to pound it in. And you tell Kramer, wedge 31. Bart Starr went back to the huddle. He said, Kramer, he wants wedge 31. Kramer said, okay. Kramer was an offensive lineman. You know, those guys that do the dirty work. Those guys get punished and pulverized, and they don't get interviewed after the game. But without a good line, football team doesn't succeed. He told Kramer, wedge 31. Kramer said, all right, I'll do it. Kramer was lined up against a future Hall of Famer. It's okay. I want to win this game for my team. Ball was snapped. Kramer did exactly what he was supposed to do. Bart Starr busted in the end zone. The Packers won. The Packers elevated Bart Starr up on their shoulders and they were marching him off the field. The Packers were the winners of the 1967 Ice Bowl. Jerry Kramer was watching all that happen and it occurred to Kramer, why don't I get any of the credit? I made the play that got him in there. And he hung his head. Y'all ever hang your head because you don't get credit? Y'all ever hang your head because, well, you know, I've done so much and I don't get notarized. And I hang my head. Well, Kramer hung his head. And he walked over to the sideline and he was feeling down. I mean, they're raising the quarterback up, but I'm the guy that made it happen. And he looked at Coach Lombardi. And Coach Lombardi would do this right here. He said, when Coach Lombardi looked at me, he said, I snapped up. And he said, I was good to go. He said, that was all the affirmation I needed. I got a thumbs up. Look, you won't get your thumbs up down here, most likely. The folks that sat and for hours and rolled up that plastic silverware so we can enjoy homecoming, probably not going to get a thumbs up, but you will up there. You know why? Because we have hope. We have hope because of what this book does for us. I'm landing the plane here. The way that we maintain situational awareness is we stay awake, we stay hopeful, and we stay serious. Don't be empty-headed as you understand what is going on around you. Joe, if you would, somebody get the lights for me. I've asked you to play a video. I'll set the stage here. You'll know who it is the minute it comes on, and we will end with this. But Vice President Mike Pence, in his 2019 commencement ceremony to Liberty University, he talks about this, and he delivers a message that's much more powerful than I can. So listen for about 3.5 minutes to what Vice President Pence has to say.
All of you in the class of 2019 is derives of the moment that we're living in today. You know, throughout most of American history, it's been pretty easy to call yourself Christian. It didn't even occur to people that you might be shunned or ridiculed for defending the teachings of the Bible. But things are different now. Some of the loudest voices for tolerance today have little tolerance for traditional Christian beliefs.
Amen.
So as you go about your daily life, just be ready. Because you're going to be asked not just to tolerate things that violate your faith, you're going to be asked to endorse them. You're going to be asked to bow down to the idols of the popular culture. So you need to prepare your minds for action, men and women. You need to show that we can love God and love our neighbor at the same time through words and deeds. And you need to be prepared to meet opposition. As the founder of this university often said, quote, "No one ever achieved greatness without experiencing opposition." So men and women of Liberty University class of 2019, as you strive for greatness, know that you'll face challenges. You'll face opposition. But just know this. If like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you end up in the fire, there'll be another in the fire. So, class of 2019, my word to all of you is decide here and now that you're going to stand firm. That you'll put into practice all the things you learned here on Liberty Mountain. That you'll never give up. That you'll persevere. And that you'll always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that you have. And you'll do so with gentleness and respect. Because our nation and our world need that message of grace and love. Maybe more now than ever before. And as you do these things in increasing measure, I promise you, you'll be blessed. You'll be a blessing to your family, to your co-workers, and you'll be a blessing to this nation. America has always been a nation of faith. And as our first Vice President, John Adams, said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." So just know, as you strengthen your foundation of faith and the foundation of faith among the American people, you will be strengthening the foundation of America itself.
Look, I should have just let him preach the message. He put those words together so eloquently. We live in a difficult time. And I do. I feel like I say the same things over again, but I don't know, it's stuff that's near and dear to my heart. No point, nowhere in the Bible does it say, well, let's put it on cruise control because God's in control. He is, and I agree with that. But we've got to stay active. We've got to stay in the fight. We can't let up. We can't get upset because we don't get credit. Remember, you're going to get that big thumbs up one day. You may not get it now, but you're going to get it. We got to keep pressing on wholeheartedly. We got to stay awake. We got to stay hopeful. And we got to stay active. Let's pray. Lord, as I come to you, Father, as feeble words and from a feeble, sinful man, I'm not worthy to speak to these fine people. Lord, I just pray your name be glorified. These are difficult times we live in. It's easy to turn off the switch and just not get involved and not engage. It's easy to just say, well, that's just the way it is. And somehow we turn off our situational awareness. And I just pray, Father, you would give us a renewed zeal. That we wouldn't be afraid to talk about you, because unlike the Christians in China, we can. But Lord, I just pray you'd help us to strive to be as close to you as possible through our Bible reading, through our prayer, through our relationships, through our church attendance. And help us, Father, to reach out to those that are hurting, because, Father, they are all around us. And that's another situation that we need to be aware of in and of itself. Lord, forgive me of my sins. I'm a sinner, Father. And I just pray you'd use these words, use the words of our Vice President's father to Vice President, to show us that we still need to be in the fight. Not just a message for a graduating class, a message for Wednesday night church in Mount Vernon, Kentucky. Go with us for the many on the prayer list, Father. We just say special prayer for them, those that are facing surgery, those that are having pain and difficulty. Lord, just comfort them and lift them up. And Lord, those that have unspoken requests, pray that you'd intervene. Forgive us, Father, where we fail you and where we fall short. And we ask these things in your name, and we say amen. Thank you all.